Amen. So, you know, why are we doing this? Why are we doing this session? You know, for me, it was important because I've been watching your kids grow up the last 6 years, and you have to look at it from kind of my perspective. You guys are a lot younger than me. You know, some of you, yeah. And your kids have been growing up, and one of the hardest things as a pastor to see a couple that you see grow up in the church, and you see them grow up in the Lord, and you see them have kids, you marry them and all that, and then later on they are splitting up and getting divorced, or they're in for marriage counseling. I've never had anyone ever come up and say, you know, I hope one day to go through this. They've never done that, but unfortunately we get there. And marriages have been around for a long time. Matter of fact, this is according to a secular anthropologist, right? And this is an observation. You know, I love how scientists get all like they found out something new. And so this anthropologist, he said, there isn't a society where marriage doesn't exist in some format, a union between a man and a woman. And they say that the institution of marriage is a marvel. And so this is right out of his article looking at, and I agree with that. It is an amazing thing what God has done. But see, they don't account for marriage as being from the Lord. They say it has a supernatural origin to be so widely spread out between all these cultures over time, or it has some kind of naturalistic principles between a man and a woman. But as Christians, we know about marriage. We know where it comes from, and we know how important it is, and how the scriptures elevate marriage and talk about marriage. And so we're not going to debate the origins. All we have to do is look at the text. So look at Genesis chapter 2, verse 18, and you'll see the text that talks about marriage. And so early on in the second chapter of you know, creation, you know, the creation account, it says in verse 18, it says, God said, it's not good that man should be alone. I will make him a helper comparable to him. Out of the ground, the Lord formed every beast of the field and every bird of the air and brought them to Adam to see what he would call them. And whatever Adam called each living creature, that was its name. So Adam called the names of all the cattle and the birds of the air and every beast of the field. But for Adam, there was not found a helper comparable to him. And the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall on Adam, and he slept, and he took one of his ribs, closed up the flesh in its place. Then the rib which the Lord God taken from man, he made into a woman, and he brought her to the man. And Adam said, this is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh, and she shall be called woman, because she was taken out of man. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. And they were both naked, and the man and his wife were not ashamed. Here we have the time where God looked at, and he designed and instituted this relationship, marriage, that we call it. And so we have this time, and God says it was good. This was good. It wasn't good for him to be alone, but it is good that he's together and that Eve and Adam are together. So it's important for us to understand, and our basis of looking at marriage, that marriage is designed and instituted by God. That's the framework. That has to be the framework and how we look at everything as far as our marriages, because then that will make us say, hey, God, you define marriage. I don't want to define it. See, the problem is we have so many different things that want to define a relationship in the world. I mean, you could never find a shortage of books or self-help things to define how your marriage should kind of run. But if it's devoid of the creator, the one who designed it, the one who instituted it, well, it's going to fall short, and there's going to be gaps. We need to understand what God thinks is important in a relationship or in a marriage. See, at the heart of this relationship is companionship and intimacy. If you look at verse 18 again, God said, it's not good that man should be alone. That companionship is an important thing to God. I see that in this text, that him being alone wasn't good. So God says, you know, I'm going to bring someone into your life, and this comparable person, this equal person, this same person, we'll get into that in a little bit, It will be a good union. So God saw that this relationship as a good thing. And so there's a privilege of, you know, for me as a pastor, being involved in and marrying people. I mean, but I tell people, you know what? I don't even care if somebody else does a ceremony. Because sometimes things happen in the States where, you know, one or the other future, you know, in the couple arrangement, they have a pastor. And they're like, well, we really want to do this premarital with you, but they don't do it. So if you could do it, but we want him to do the ceremony, I tell them I don't care. I don't really care. I would rather invest. When we do premarital at our church, it's about 8 to 10 weeks. And then that doesn't, and that's not calendar weeks. It's not straight because they have a lot of homework to do in between. It's 8 or 10 week sessions with me. And I say, I would rather invest in your relationship and in your marriage so you understand how important this is and that you guys stay married for your whole life and that you work through problems, that it's a model marriage. I don't care who goes up and spends 30 minutes and says, I do. Because that part goes away. The things that we talk about in this premarital last a lifetime. And so I've done many, many sessions with people and I haven't done the ceremonies because that part's not important. This is the important part. And it's really a privilege because when I am blessed to do it, and I'm not saying that I don't like doing the ceremony because I wish I could bottle, capture the look of a face when the groom sees the bride come down the aisle. It's amazing. I mean, if you could bottle that and sell it, the happiness, oh my goodness. I mean, that is the most amazing time. When they are looking at each other, I have like little cues I tell them during premarital. When you're doing that and you're not listening to me and it's time for you to do something, I'll tap on your toe. I'll keep it so we don't mess up the video. I'll just give you a little tap on your toe and just, it's either I do or yes or something. You know, you got to answer because they're so enamored with each other. Unfortunately, things happen. And people who, have problems that they don't deal with it, they do get to that point where they're like, I don't want to do this anymore. And I don't want to be married anymore. Or I hate you. I mean, I've had marital counseling sessions where, hopefully not premarital, they're saying they hate each other, but I haven't had one of those, where they're like, you know, thinking that, that the marriage counseling was going to be something where they can fight. I'm like, time out. That's not why you're here. I'm not here to be a referee. But again, nobody ever gets married to say that one day I hope to say that I hate you. Because they have this day that's so joyful and they love each other so much. And it's such a sweet time. Because marriages can be tough. They can be tough. Plus, they're under attack. They're under attack. Our world says that there's a different idea of what marriage and relationship should be like. Unfortunately, self-serving has become the kind of standard. That you could be in this relationship, but it really has to fit all your needs. Sacrificing for the other person kind of takes a second step. This is a little graphic here. Divorce rates in the world. And we're not going to spend too much time on it, but I just wanted you to kind of see what it looks like. But if you see Belgium right there, greater than 60%. Highest in the world is Belgium. You can see us in the United States and Russia. We're in the 50 to 59. Scandinavia is in the 40 to 49 range. However, that's a fake number. It's a fake number because the divorce rates in Scandinavia are lower because less people are getting married. So it's a false number. Fewer people are getting married. Fewer people get divorced. The divorce rates, this is actual numbers. If you look at it to 2010 of the Scandinavian countries, was able to find this graphic. You can see the climbing rate in your area of divorces. Matter of fact, in 2004, there was an article that said the title of it was The End of Marriage in Scandinavia. It starts off, marriage is slowly dying in Scandinavia. Majority of children in Sweden, Norway are born out of wedlock. 60% of the firstborn children in Denmark are unmarried parents. Norway. It's increased from 39 to 50% over 10 years. In Sweden, it rose from 47 to 55 in the same time frame. Marriage is not being elevated. I'm sharing this. I'm starting off this way because our marriages are under attack. In the United States, and I couldn't find this, but in the United States, it's finally crept up that marriages in the church, divorce rates, are the same as the world. We've caught up to the world. I couldn't find it here, but I imagine that it's probably at least the same, if not more of a problem here. And I say that because in the same article, the gentleman, and he did a great job in this article, but one of the things he said, which Scandinavia sets the standard for marriages in the world, and unfortunately they're setting the standard for divorces in the world as well. This relationship that the world calls marriage has been one of convenience. Nothing more than a situation that you're currently in that you can change if you change your mind. It's, you know, something easy to do. They've made it very easy to do. Where the marriage then becomes about the person instead of the will of the Lord, the one who instituted and designed marriage. And that's why we have to have that as our basis. We have to have God at the apex of our relationship. And so I said that this would be practical, and it is. It's going to be very practical. We're going to go through some things that you would say, well, yeah, I know that, but I want you to see it as well. Because if God is not at the apex of your relationship and your marriage, then you already have a problem, and you're destined for more problems. So at the top of our relationship, God needs to be there at the top of it all. Does anybody disagree with that at all? Here? No? If you do, then we need to chat. Because if God isn't at the top, then you're wrong. We're wrong whenever we replace God. And even though we can articulate it and we can say, well, of course I believe that. Is he at the top? That's a different, you know, question, isn't it? Because you can say he's at the top, but is he at the top? So in this graphic, I like to call it the God triangle. This is one of the things I actually go through. This is like session one of a premarital counseling. I will draw this graphic, I will draw it. But for you, I made it because you couldn't, you know, see my drawings very well. So each person on this God triangle, each leg, husband and wife. So blue and pinkish, purple. It's the only color I could get. It's important to kind of look at it graphically and see where you are in that triangle. The further you are away from the Lord, the further you are away from the Lord, it's just natural. The further you will be apart from each other, right? It makes sense, right? And you can see that if you've drawn away from the Lord, if you aren't doing your devotions and if you don't have that close connection, have you ever noticed that you have some more problems in your relationship with your wife? You ever seen that? It's true. And it doesn't matter if the other person has a closer relationship. Because naturally, if you look at that distance, it's actually greater. It's different. Because that one person who has a closer relationship with the Lord, right? God is at the top, obviously, of their triangle. And if that person has, you know, the other person in the relationship, have they replaced God at the top? Is God not their first priority? They will still have problems. It's only when we have God, you know, at the top of everything we're doing, we're focused on our relationship with him, you will be at the closest together as a couple. Now, very easy, self-explanatory, right? And you're saying, well, why are you showing us stuff like that? Because we need it. We need visual reminders. We need some. I hope this isn't blazoned and burned into your head. Because we forget that. When you start having problems, it's like, ask yourself, if I let something kind of slip in that's more of a priority right now in my life than God and my relationship with him? Because if you don't have that, you will have those problems. And you need to understand that. If your marriage is important, then your relationship with God needs to be important. And it shouldn't even be something that we have to talk about, but we do, because things happen and we start, you know, taking on priorities and spiritual priorities start taking a back seat. And then you become further and further apart from your spouse, and you have those challenges. And it's only when we, you know, are that close to the Lord, we're that close together. You know, so again, very practical, very easy to understand. But I think, I hope that it's something that stays with you for a while, because priorities do slip in. We have lots of priorities, lots and lots of priorities. Hey, Bob, can you do me a favor? I forgot to grab something out. In the box is a red folder with the, you know, the one deals and the pens as well. And if someone could help him pass those out. We've added a lot to our plates. We've added so many things to our plates. You know, it never ceases to amaze me in our world how many conveniences we have, but we have less time. Have you noticed that? I mean, the microwave. The microwave is a great thing. When I was a kid, we had to actually set the microwave. We had to punch in the time. Like, I want to cook X, and I have to push in 5 minutes, and I have to set the power, and then you had to hit start. We've created so many conveniences now, you don't even have to do that. You just hit 30 second, you know, right? 10 times, you guys know what I'm talking about? You have that, right? I mean, there you go. But we have these, you know, conveniences, but we actually have more problems prioritizing all the things that we have to do. All the things we have to do. It's just like mind-boggling. Like how many things we got to do in our life. Why do we keep adding things to our plate? Why do we do that? When we know we only have 24 hours in a day. It doesn't matter how many conveniences you have, your time is still limited. You take out sleep, you take out time to eat, you take out your time with the Lord, you start whittling down. You have less and less time. You put in work. What time? How much time do you think you have left in a day? It's a few hours. It's really just a few hours. So I would like you to look at these sheets. And as I'm talking here about order, I want you to start visualizing this. And I'll give you a little homework assignment right here. So it's not going to be graded. You're not going to hand it in. This is for you. So I don't want anybody to kind of, you know, get panicked. I'm not going to look at these, and nobody's going to look at them. You could take them after this class. You can rip them up. But this is for you to start visualizing some of the things that are important in your life. And so start thinking about, if I ask you, what's most important in your life? What's next? Ask yourself, why is it important? That's a great question to ask as well. Why is it important? Why is this not important? You know, if this is important, why is this not? Order is an important thing. And so if we don't order and structure our lives, then the things start taking over our lives, right? You start becoming a slave to your schedule. And I don't want you to be in that. I mean, do you guys have that problem in Scandinavia? Does that happen? You know, where your schedule starts dictating your life? Yeah? Yeah, we have it. I mean, big time. I mean, you talk with people and they're like, oh, well, I'm so busy today. I got to take this person here and I got to do this here. And my kid's got this and I got the other kid here. I'm like, you don't really have to do that, right? I mean, you could say you're not going to be on this swim team. If it's important to swim, you're going to this swim team. And it's going to be close to the house so we can get back in time and have dinner as a family. That's okay to do. Because what's more important? That, you know, when everything blows up in your family, it's like, I'm sure glad though I drove you for an hour to swim class every day, back and forth. I mean, that happens in the States. People will drive for an hour just to take their kid for a half an hour swim. And they'll sacrifice time as a family. And I'm saying, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. Ordering your life is important. Now, when I look at the scriptures, I see that Jesus, he was very organized. And I love that about the practical side about the scriptures. We often don't look at the practical side of the scriptures enough. I believe it speaks to its authenticity. When I see Jesus tell the disciples to sit them down into groups on the green grass when he was feeding the 5,000, it says they sat down in groups of 50 or 100 in Mark chapter 6. I see organization. Because how else would you feed you know, 5,000 men, they think, you know, somewhere around 9,000 women and children, you know, if you added them all together, how would you feed 5,000 people unless you had an organized plan? You couldn't. So Jesus had to tell them to organize this mob. I know you wanted to send them home, but I want you to feed them. Now sit them down in groups. And so it's important that we look at our lives practically as well. We do a good job on the spiritual things, but in the church, I believe we don't spend enough time looking at the practical things. Is your life in order? That's just practical. It's just very practical. Ordering your life, putting it into groups, understanding what is taking your time. Is this something that I want to spend my time on? Is it an important thing? And so we talked about the relationship with God, you know, the God triangle. And you see it, you got, you know, how the graphic works. Now what I want you to do is start looking at the things in your life. We're only spending like 2 minutes. Jot it down. It's your handwriting again. You need to be the one who reads it. But you have all these things in your life. You have, you know, kids, you have job, family, ministry, hobbies, everything, whatever you do. Now, I don't want you to sit there and think about what it should look like. I want you to kind of jot down what's kind of going on in your life right now. So spend a couple minutes and start prioritizing your life. The things in the center are the most important in kind of the subsequent circles, right? Kind of just balance your life. So, go. I'll sing Jeopardy theme song music right now. Oh, we're a few short? One per couple. I'm sorry. I should have said that. Because you're a couple, the two shall be one, right? Each one of you do not have your own chart. Because as a married couple, I'm glad I saw that. As a married couple, you should only have one hub, right? Yeah, makes sense. So go ahead and fill it out. You got one? Start writing down. You good? Yeah. No, you guys are doing it together right now. You're doing it right now. Don't fight. This should not produce a fight. If it produces a fight, I failed you and I'm sorry. So as you're doing this and you're looking at it, remember, you're organizing your life. Yeah, how it is. How it is. How it is. We're doing this. You guys can keep working. I'm just going to chat a little bit. When you're prioritizing this, what we're trying to do here is you're looking at how balanced your life is, how ordered it is. And by doing this, we'll see some of the things that, you know, could potentially be challenges. Nope. You can put as many things in each hub that's there. You should not have just one thing in there. It should be multiple things. You know, there is, you know, some things. We'll talk about what mine looks like, but you have lots of things in your life. Everything you're doing should be represented somehow in this hub. So how are we doing? We're getting close? Anybody need some more time? All right. So let's, and you could, you know, I mean, it's not going to be exhaustive, but think about everything in your life. You got a lot of things, and the more you talk, the more you're going to add, right? Again, I want you to visualize balance. Did the God triangle help you with your relationship understand, right? Did it help? No? Okay, it didn't. Okay, it did. Oh, good, good, good. I know you cheated. Nils is trying to be a pet, teacher's pet, right? So if you look at the circle, does that look very balanced, right? It looks like chaos to me. I mean, if you had everything in our life like this, everything is competing, right? Everything would be competing for your time. And part of understanding this balance is just prioritizing what's important. Now, you should have, by the God triangle, have understood what the center circle should be. Because we just discussed that, right? This is what the center should look like. Now, again, I promise that I would not ask you what is in your center circle. So when I ask you something about this, I'm asking you to not say anything, but I'm asking you to ask yourself, what's in your center circle? Does it look like this? Because if it doesn't look like this, the whole God triangle visualization, right, is not going to work. The only thing that you can put in this center circle is you, your, you know, husband or wife or vice versa, if you know what I'm talking about. Because anything else you put in this center is going to take away from that other relationship. If you add something to the center circle, you're sacrificing, you're replacing, you know, potentially God at the top or your spouse. And so just know, in that center circle, that is the God triangle. And if you start adding things to that, you are separating yourself from one or the other. You got to understand that. And that's why we're going through this practical side to look at. But see, the thing is we got all these other things. All these other things, and they are competing for your time. They're competing for your interest. So difficult. So we organize it. This is the next hub. The kids, right? If you have them, they're here. If you don't have them, they're not here. But our centers should be all the same, regardless of our stage in life. If you have children, and they are children that are still in your home, children that haven't went out and got married, this is what your hub should look like. And that is the only thing in that hub. Now, I get lots of arguments, and I have big shoulders. I don't care. I will argue if you need to argue. I'd prefer not to, but I want you to think about it. That's your core family structure right there. So if we look at it and we talk about getting back to the basics, that is the basics right there. So you can't argue with me that that isn't your priority if you have, you know, again, you know, children that are still in your home that depend on you. That's your core family structure. What else could you add to that hub that's more important than your kids? Has anybody got anything? No, I put you on the spot. You're not. Because you're not going to have anything. So our circle, if we have children that are still in our home, and I emphasize that, because if children are outside of your home, they're not in that circle necessarily. They are, but their relationship has changed. We'll talk about that in a little moment, because we have already read that it says that in marriage, the two shall become one. They should leave, right? Leave and cleave. And so in this situation now, when we have kids that are depending on us, they're our core. And our kids, are important. Some people, that the number one argument is that people will say, well, kids are in the middle. Kids should be in the middle. Well, if you put a child in the middle or your children in the middle, what part of the relationship are you going to sacrifice? I could tell you where the sacrifice happens in an unhealthy way. It happens between the spouse, because people, it's all about the kids then. It isn't about their spouse anymore. Everything's about the kids. And I don't know about in Scandinavia, Sorry, I'm getting texts. I should have turned that off. I apologize. What happens is people have, their kids, and they put them in there, and it sacrifices their relationship with their spouse. And I don't know if this happens in Scandinavia, but what happens in the States are people only get, stay together until the kids leave home, and then they get divorced. You ever seen that happen? Yeah, it happens all the time in the States. As soon as the kids, the last one's 18, the last one goes to college, well, we've been preparing for this the whole time. We're ready to go. The papers are done. We're getting divorced. We only stay together for you, honey. I mean, think about what that does to the kids. You think that makes them feel great? Like, oh, I'm so glad you stayed together until I was 18. Now my life is ruined. That's what they say. That happens when you put the child there, because then the relationship with, the husband or the wife is not the priority anymore. It becomes about the kids. That's what happens when the kids are in that circle. So if someone argues about that, it doesn't mean that they're not important. It's actually putting them in this order means you love them. You love them enough to put them in the right spot in the right order, because if your relationship isn't right with the Lord, or if your relationship isn't right with your spouse, then you're not going to have a very good relationship with your child, and they're not going, to have that same type of, the best perfect, environment. It'll be unhealthy. They'll get in the way of that relationship, and we'll actually be causing harm to them. And so we want to have this focused relationship. But again, too many other things in our life, too many other things that are, coming up, and where do we fit all of these things? It just keeps going out there. We have family, that's kind of our in-laws. We have church family, we have work, and I put lots of question marks in there because it's just tons and tons of stuff that fill our days and times. But you can kind of see where I'm going with this. That's your next hub. Your family. Again, still very core to the central family unit. I would, yield that all of ours should look very familiar. And it should look the same. And I put church family there because guess what? We all have extended family, and blood isn't always the determination of family. You guys are very close and dear to me. Than some of my family members that I don't really even know, right? That are living lives that I would not want to hang around or have my kids around, doing things that even hanging around them, you can get in trouble. That kind of family. So we're family, we're blood family, but we're not really family, are we? And so I put church family there because we are bound together in our relationship with Jesus Christ. And you guys are my family, whether I'm the crazy uncle from America or what, but but I do consider you guys my family. And so you're in that circle, my circle. And it's important to understand that balance, even with family, to get it right, that extended type of family. And again, people will argue with me when I do this, and they'll say, how dare you put me on the outside? But look, if you look at we're not saying something isn't important. The circles don't, mean that something is not important. It's just balance and order. It's just balance and order. And we're not saying that, our extended families aren't important, but God did intend it to look like this. I can prove it from the scriptures. Genesis chapter 2, verse 24, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. That's what this presents. It's just getting things in the right order and balance. It doesn't mean you can't be in the same city, the same neighborhood, in the same place. It's just you have the right understanding of the order and the balance of your life. And I hope my kids wouldn't, want to spend time with me. When they get older, they might need a break after they get their freedom. They'd be like, but hopefully they appreciate it later. Like, oh, he wasn't too bad, right? It's good for your kids to go out and get air under their wings and fly and do things, but you're still your kids. And I know that eventually I will be taking a step back in their life in their order. And that's okay. I want them to focus on their core family unit because someday, I pray that they outlive me. And when I'm gone, I'm not in that circle. That center hub needs to function well. And helping our kids understand that and modeling that is helping them with their life. I don't want them so dependent on me that if I'm out of the picture, that their life goes a little crazy. Right? Do you guys kind of see where I'm going with this? And so order and balance isn't just for you. It's for, you know, all of us. And this leave statement, you know, in Genesis chapter 2, it's actually a very strong word. That word, 215 times, that word leave, even though it says leave, 215 times the same Hebrew word is translated forsake. That's how strong that word is. So when you see that, you know, leave their parents, it actually is a word that's translated more often, forsake them. Not in a negative way. I mean, this is a family affair here. We're family, but it's not in a negative way. It's just understanding the order that comes from the biblical perspective of our relationships. And so when you look at that circle, don't look at it as a negative. Don't look at it that way. And so the next tub, it's very, very simple, right? Everything else. And so everything that you were probably adding to your middle hubs, everything you were adding, all the little question marks that are different, that's where everything else goes. And all of them want to compete for your time. And in that circle, there are those that want to draw more circles and more circles, but that just gives you a reason to overextend yourself. That's why I keep it very simple like this, because I don't want you to do that. Because you know what happens? The more things you add, well, this is what happens. Everything wants to change order. That's what happens in, you know, we've already kind of discussed it with the kids, but naturally, everything has a competing interest. Work wants to take a priority in your life. I mean, I don't know how, I've never worked for a European boss, but in the States, they say it's great. They're never really kind of bossy, right? Does that happen here for real? Because they say it's a dream to work here in the States, that our bosses are demanding here. No? Tice, are you demanding boss? Nope. Nope. No, I mean, it happens in work though, right? Deadlines are deadlines. People's jobs on the line cause people to act weird. Your work wants to move up in a priority and replace somebody else on that list. Everything wants to move up. Everything is important, you know, in their own eyes. If you look at it, it's not only that. Not only does everything want to kind of move up, but as this is being slower, there we go. Everything also wants to be in the middle, the center. And when you realize that, that'll help you put things in order and help you get balance and even help you change your life. I say that because I was always wanting to do something for the Lord early on. I really didn't know what it would be. I didn't think that I was qualified to do very much. And there may be some, you know, people now that says you're still not, but you know, God uses the foolish things of the world to confound the wise, right? But I didn't think that I could do anything for the Lord, but I had a desire. And I would pray a simple prayer, Lord, and it was funny because I'm a construction worker. And so for me, tools are, as an electrician, I have a different screwdriver for many, many different things. That I have one screwdriver that just tightens breakers inside a panel. That's the only time I pull that screwdriver out. Because it's special. It's insulated. It has a special tip on it that I only need it for that task. And I prayed, Lord, if I could just be a special screwdriver, I don't need to be an everyday screwdriver. Just a tool that you would just use whenever you would need it. I am okay with that. I didn't have any grand ideas that I would ever do anything. And I prayed and there was no answer. Ever. And I was like, okay, well, apparently you agree that I shouldn't be doing anything for you, Lord. But I was distraught. My life was not in order. And what the Lord showed me was like, you keep praying this prayer, but you're not even available. I can't use you. You're not even available. I'm like, well, Lord, I don't have time. You see, I don't have time. And he's like, you have more time than you think. And so I started looking at my life, putting something like this together. Not so, I mean, I've refined this over the years, but I started listing my schedule. Because what's important, if you look at your schedule, you'll find out what's important in your life. And so sometime, I don't remember when it was maybe 3 or 4 years into our marriage, I had an opportunity for work. And a lot of people play golf in business, right? It's where a lot of deals got done. I did deals playing golf, working with contractors. And there's a couple contractors that said, hey, guess what? We have a hockey team getting together. And to kind of just shorten up the story, I started playing hockey, loved it, had a great time. I was playing a couple times at night. Ice time is really late in the States to get to be able to play because the kids play earlier and, you know, old people like myself get to play later. I mean, out until like midnight, 1 o'clock. And so I'd sleep a little later and then I'd get up and go to work. I was kind of tired, have to take a nap when I got home. And then I would go out and do some practice and I would play hockey again. But Lord, I don't have any time. He's like, you have time. And I started looking, I was like, wow, I have this hobby, this stress reliever, this thing that I'm playing with other construction workers to get more jobs, but I spent a lot of time playing hockey. I wasn't doing anything wrong. It wasn't sinful. I just played and I was witnessing to God, you know, other guys and on the team. But it was really a barrier for me serving the Lord. And really, when I looked at it, well, it was a barrier. You know, that was in the middle. It was a barrier between my wife. I wasn't seeing her. I wasn't spending time. I was tired. I'd come home from work. I'd have to take a quick nap so I could go play some hockey. Hockey, this hobby, became kind of important. And so I said, Lord, well, I am going to take all this time that I was doing that, and I'm going to quit it. I still have a hockey bag in my garage with several $100, maybe about $900 to $1,000 of gear sitting there for years. And it's a good reminder for me because that bag represented a whole bunch of time lost in serving the Lord. So I took my time and I said, Lord, I'm going to start serving you because that's more important to me. And that's what I was praying. And as soon as I started doing that, the Lord started using me. And so when you look at balance, you have to look at it. What is it impeding in your life, in your service to the Lord, in your relationships with your family, your children, your wife? Everything wants to be in the middle, even a hobby. And you can let it there. You can let it get there if you'd like. But you're going to suffer. You're going to sacrifice things. And you're going to abuse, really, and I say that word, you're going to abuse those people in the middle because Barbara didn't deserve that. She supported it for sure. She said, hey, go out and have fun. And she really did, but I can't get that time back. I can't go back, you know, for the, I don't know, maybe it's three years I probably did that. I can't get that time back. I don't have 3 years worth of date nights, basically. Yeah, I sacrificed that, you know, because I was playing hockey. And you can never get that back. And it's okay. She's very gracious. God's very gracious. And you don't need to beat yourself up if you have things out of balance. You just have to understand that it can't last forever until when you're out of balance and you wreck and something will happen. Because what would you think would happen? And I'm putting myself out there. That's the great thing about a workshop. You don't have to, beat yourself up. I'm going to beat myself up. You can throw it at me. But what do you think would happen if I continued to do that for 6 years, 7 years, 8 years, 10 years? What would I have missed? I wouldn't be here. I could tell you that. I'd still be praying. Well, I probably would have given up praying. Well, Lord, I guess you don't ever want to use me. It wasn't that. I was just never available. God wasn't important. What else would I have sacrificed? Well, probably my marriage. Because at some point, Bart would have been like, well, not very important to you. You don't really spend a lot of time with me. My kids wouldn't have seen that they were important to me. To be there. It doesn't mean we always have to do something, but to be there. I was somewhere else. And I was too tired to take care of the things that I needed to take care of. Work. Well, work is an interesting thing. You know, work for you, I don't know what it looks like, but I can tell you, work, when it wants to be in that middle, work, and guys, gals, we do this, we think we're doing the best thing for our family by putting work in the middle. You're not. But I have to take care of my family. Oh, yeah. Well, are you the one doing it? Is the Lord doing it? But I need, again, who's doing it? Because if you think that you're the one taking care of your family, well, what happens when that job goes away? You're not doing a very good job taking care of your family. Right? If you want to take the burden on, if you lose your job, then you got to take that burden as well. It was all about you. I think one of the things about being self-employed for so many years, owning a business, that I just had total reliance on the Lord, and it really taught me to go, whether I get a job, I don't have a job, you know, if I didn't win the contract, if the job made money, lose money, it's like, Lord, you're in control of this. I even told somebody one time they weren't going to pay us. In 17 years in business, and again, I don't know how it is here, but it's very hard as a contractor to get paid. Very hard. Many people don't like that. That's their number one complaint about being a contractor. 17 years of owning a construction company, I got paid. Every contract got paid. There's only one time a person didn't pay, but their company paid me. It was the only one time that the individual directly didn't pay me in 17 years. It's really unheard of. I even told people when they threatened not to pay, I'm like, you're not paying me, you're not paying God, because this is his company and he runs it. And they're like, I don't know if that scared them to pay me. But I really meant it, because I had that in my heart. And so I'm working for the Lord, whether I'm, you know, turning a screwdriver, whatever I'm doing, I'm working for the Lord. You can't put work there and think you're doing in the middle. You can't put work there and think that you're doing a good job for your family and taking care of them by sacrificing your relationship with the Lord. It says in Matthew chapter 16, verse 26, what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his soul? But I would add to that, replace the word. What does it profit a man if he gains the whole world but loses his family? A woman gains everything but loses their family. You can add whatever word you want in there. People exchange a lot for possessions, and possessions will put you out of balance really quickly. It doesn't mean that, you know, if you have money or you have a great opportunity, it just means you have more responsibility. You have, you know, more that you're responsible. You're a steward. And so don't look at, you know, balance being, you know, something that I have to take care of my family, so I'm going to do this to climb up the corporate ladder. But what about if God tells you to quit your job? Are you listening to that? Would you be willing to do that to keep balance? You should. Because the job isn't the most important thing. If God's telling you to quit your job, but I've been there for 17 years and I almost, you not trust the Lord? I say that because I had to wrestle with that. I sold a business that was, you know, 10 years old. I got over the hump and it was doing really well. And God said, sell your business. I was like, what? And he goes, and sell your house. I was like, okay. I mean, it was really an easy thing for me. Sell your tractor. I was like, my tractor is a John Deere and I wanted that for a long time. Okay. Sell your truck. I'm like, okay. I didn't know the Lord was going to move me into ministry. And I sold all those things. It was a great opportunity. I didn't know what it was going to look like. I hadn't even been asked to go on staff at a church. I said, Lord, if this is from you, you got to do two things. You got to talk to Barbara, because I don't think I can go up and say I'm selling everything. And I don't want, no, I mean, I say that because I don't think I can do that. You need to tell her, because if it's from you and I'm willing to do it, she has to be willing as well. I believe God could do that. I'm just, you know, I'm like, I'm not going to throw a seed out there. I didn't say a word to her. God said, just give her this verse. I gave her that verse. 2 days. She says, when are we selling everything? That's not for you. That was for her. But seriously, I believe God can do things like that. And if he tells you to stop, I trust that he is going to start you right back up with no problems, whatever it is. Because balance and glorifying him is that important. That is what we should understand, that we're here for for much, much more than just our jobs. We're here to represent the Lord. And we'll get into this into the next session of how important our relationship is. And, you know, to the Lord, but also as a picture to the world. And when our marriages fail in the church, we're not presenting the right picture at all. When our lives are out of balance, we're not presenting the right picture. People should look at us and say, why is your marriage working out? I'm not saying it's perfect, because we'll talk about the problems later. I'm just saying, why is it working out? Well, because God is at the top. God is at the center, and he's the most important. Amen? I mean, we're a little bit over, but not really. But questions, really quick. Very practical. No questions? You have a question, or are you just prompting to jump on me? Kids, go get your kids. Don't leave them down there. So do that first, please. I know you might want to talk, but please go get your kids. And let's pray. Lord, I pray for this time.